Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
All right, we're not going to wait any longer. Again, Scott Hunt's in the virtual green room. Scott, you got the chat window now? I can't hear you, but I can see you. It's in the comment box up at the top. So I'm going to go through some quick announcements, and we will get started, okay? So welcome, everyone. Again, it's PrepperNet Live, and we got Scott Hunt. And so a few things I want to go over first. So we've been doing this for a while now. You can see some of the guests that we've had. We've had Dr. Bones, Nurse Amy. We got Charlie, Sam Kopler, Kyle. EMP was supposed to be here. They backed out. We had a smart guy, Forrest. I'm just kidding. Tonight is Scott Hunt. And then next week, we got Pastor Felix. I'm going to be asking questions about Bible prophecy and end times. And I know Scott will probably want to bring that up. But anyway, that's next week. And so you can go back and watch any of these if you want to. One of the things I did last week was a internet privacy and security. It's still on. Probably this weekend, I'm going to take that down so it doesn't compete with my actual class that I teach. That's a lot of the meat that's in my class I teach. But I don't want to keep it up because I just did it for you guys. And I usually sell my class. And try to make money on that, but it's still up. It'll be over up through the weekend, so you better go see it. It is wonderful. Well, it's okay. So anyway, it's still up. It's on the YouTube channel, so all you need to know right here. Next weekend, when I have the pastor Felix on, my book, The Case for Christian Preparedness, will be free all weekend long for a Kindle download. It'll be free next weekend, and you can download it. And then I would say within the next 30 days, my next book will be published, and it's better than this one. I'm just saying it's better than this one. So anyway, next weekend, see you guys then. Hey, go to PrepperNet.com. You join. It is absolutely free to join, but the smart people actually become a premium member. And what that does is it supports this and what I'm doing and some other things, some freebies that you get on there as well. Right now I've opened, usually this is for our premium members, and I'm opening this up to everyone. I'm probably going to close it down here soon, but $40 a year, that's like a cup of coffee in New York City. So that supports me. Someone asked me about, how much does it cost to run PrepperNet? And I think I gave this answer out a couple of weeks ago. I have 80 meetups. You divide that by 3, times that by 200, and it's $6,000 just for meetups. So anyway, it does cost money. It's not free. So anyway, join us at PrepperNet. I'm having a huge giveaway, huge. The biggest giveaway I think ever given away ever in the history of time. It is a Sun Oven, which I happen to be the CEO of. It is a Sun Oven cover, which I actually designed, and we sold thousands of them to our current customers. It's a Sawyer water filter, and it's Legacy Food, which I sell on my website. Now, Scott sells, I don't know if he sells Mountain House. So, hey, pick your variety. Legacy's the best. But anyway, support everyone in this industry that you can. But that giveaway we're going to give that away next weekend. I'm going to actually, software, I can hit a button, it pulls up a name, and it's one big prize. We're not giving away little stuff, just one big, you either win or you lose. That is life. You're either a winner or first, second place. So the first loser. So anyway, a Sun Oven, all that is going to be given away, except, see the pots from my Sun Oven? We don't have them any longer. So anyway, you won't be getting them pots. So anyway, big giveaway. Go sign up. Do it after the show, because if you do it right now, you're going to miss some incredible stuff. So, and then I do sell Legacy. Listen, Legacy is the best food. It's the best. I mean, you know what? Trump even said it in a news conference. I can't remember when it was, but Donald Trump did say Legacy, and he said, buy from me. That's just what I heard on the internet. So anyway, with all that said, let's bring in the one and only Scott Hunt, Engineer 775.
Hello, Forrest. How are you?
We can hear you. You look marvelous.
Oh my goodness. We'll pay you later.
Yeah. So Scott, most of you guys know Scott from his YouTube channel. And so Scott, instead of me telling about yourself, it's time to pat yourself on the back and put your pride aside and just tell us about Scott Hunt.
Well, thanks for having me on. So I'm glad your show is 3 hours long, because it might take that long. No, I'm just kidding. Good to see everybody. I'm looking at the chat room here. My name is Scott Hunt, Engineer 775 on YouTube. Mechanical engineer by training. You see my I Love Me wall behind me. It's got some of my degrees and diplomas. And so I have a master's degree in robotics from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. That's where I got my engineer training. A lot of people ask on YouTube, what kind of engineer do you think you are? You're no engineer. So anyway, at least I have a couple pieces of paper behind me. I do have some credentials, but most of my credentials, my street creds, are in actually doing stuff, building things, designing systems, whether they're off-grid, hybrid, on-grid. So I love figuring things out, trying to try new things. My wife says I'm having an affair with Miss Waters. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out things with water, water pumping, water delivery, water purification. So I started with water on our homestead. That's been my hobby, homesteading, for about 25 years. And so we raise cows and chickens on our little farm here in South Carolina. And part of that process was to try to move water around and to pump water from old school technologies from the 1700s. So I just started researching things that we have lost or forgotten, and just kind of had a lot of fun trying to figure out how to do these simple things, life-saving things, that kind of led into the preparedness world. So everything that I was working on for about 10 to 20 years just poured it over beautifully into preparedness. So if you need water, you need hot water, you need some electricity, you name it, air conditioning. So we've been building and building and building and studying how to prepare a homestead, a group, individuals. And for the last, oh my goodness, we've been in business now as practical preppers since 2011. And we're just booked. We're very thankful for what we've, where we are, the folks that we have working for us and the projects, the great customers. I travel all over the place, putting in systems for folks. And now, because we're so crazy busy, I'm doing a lot of DIY. We'll probably talk about it. So I've been working really hard to put together do-it-yourself systems so that you can do it yourself, because I can't get to everybody that wants what we do. So it's been a lot of fun.
Not everyone can afford you either.
Yeah, it can be expensive, and the DIY will cut the price in half if you're willing to do the work, and it is a lot of work. And so engineering background, I was a pastor, as Forrest mentioned, a pastor for 10 years as a Calvary Chapel pastor. Now I'm kind of, I don't know what I am. My ministry is helping people prepare. Spiritual preparedness is the most important, but physical preparedness is right there in the times in which we live. I feel, you know, we're called for the time in which we live, and there's plenty of reasons to prepare. So anyway, so I hope that's enough.
Nope.
That's not enough.
You forgot one thing.
I forget.
and you didn't want me to even bring it up.
What's that?
The show.
Oh, Doomsday Preppers. He keeps hasn't Doomsday Preppers run its course? I guess it's coming back on Netflix. A couple of my customers said they're watching it for the first time. So, yeah, we were on Doomsday Preppers. We were the pilot. Southern Prepper 1 and I were on the pilot episode for that show. And then they scored us. These were folks from Manhattan, Washington, saying, this is your survivability score. I'm like, you folks don't know. You don't even know what a fence post is. So we ended up saying, hey, why don't you hire us to score the people that you cast for the show? That's how that started. We were on every episode scoring people, and it became us versus them, and we never really got to talk to the prepper the first few seasons. Then we could talk to the prepper after in season three, season four. We did Doomsday Castle, and that kind of ran its course. So Forrest had to bring it up again. I had to bring it up.
I mean, that's. I mean, we know that that they changed everything and made preppers look bad, but just being a part of that that's an achievement.
I guess it did kind of put our name on the map, and it was good. No, it was, even the negative publicity was good publicity for us, so I can't complain. So
you and Dave did get the lowest score possible.
No. Absolutely, we failed. And that's why we wanted control over the reporting after that.
Yeah, that's hilarious. So, yeah, I did make him bring that up because I think it's a good achievement. It really is.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I didn't know you were part of Doomsday Castle.
Yeah, I was on episode 3. They put me in as the friend of the owner, and I got them water up to their castle from two springs.
They were nuts. Now, that I mean.
Yes. Look
at that. Yep. So I got a bunch of questions for you.
Great.
A lot of these have come from people ask me at PrepperNet, or I hear them ask, people ask. And so one of the ones that has been, I mean, so I'm going to ask you a bunch. So there's a bunch of them. But one of them is, because I sell Legacy, I think you sell Mountain House, correct?
We sell Mountain House and Thrive.
And Thrive. So on my Facebook page, a lot of people ask about the Harvest Right freeze dryer. And I remember me and you, we were talking to the CEO, and you know, we wanted one for free, but they wouldn't give us one for free. But you got one. Yeah, you remember that conversation.
I do.
But you got one, and I want to know what your thoughts are, and is it worth it for people to buy?
It is another tool in the tool bag for food preparedness. So it's not the only way to go. It's a power consuming process, and it can take a long time. And because it's a 120 volt device, it's a high amperage device. So people trying to do this off grid are that's just one thing I wanted to tell folks, that if you're trying to power this with your off-grid solar generator or your battery-based system, you are going to use a lot of juice on an unbalanced load. It's not a 240-volt load or compressor. So it uses a lot of unbalanced – we can talk about that if you want to. But anyway, it consumes a lot of energy. It works great. Some people have had issues with certain types of foods that they're wanting to freeze-dry. But what I got it for me was eggs. It does a fantastic job on scrambled eggs. So you can, number 10 cans are the way we've chosen to store most of our food. Mm-hmm. And so making basically 8 dozen eggs in a fit in a can is just amazing to me. So I got long-term protein, freeze-dried meats, protein, as I'll put a plug in for that carnivore diet I'm on.
We'll talk about that in just a second. Right, actually, I was going to call that before the end.
Just a little prepper plug. I'm finding it much more efficient to store proteins and raise animals that eat my food rather than growing my food. Does that make any sense? Yeah. I'm raising animals that eat those vegetables, and they're much more efficient at converting amino acids and forage into protein. If you have the space to do it, not everybody's going to have a little farm. I understand. But that's for me. Cows and chickens, pretty much I could survive forever on steak and egg.
Well, let's go back and let's do talk about it. So I saw a video that you did, I guess, 50 some days ago.
Yep.
And you said you were going to go on this carnivore diet. And I was, I, I think I text you or something. Yeah, I text you a few days later and said, saw your video. Do you remember that? And I said, hey, yeah. I need to lose some pounds as well. You know, I'm at my fighting weight. I just need to lose that little. No, I'm kidding. And so you started a diet. I've lost 18 pounds, which I don't know tomorrow. Tomorrow's my weigh-in. I don't weigh every day like you do, apparently. and you tell us where you are in your journey.
I'm actually going to do a video on Sunday for Monday, which will be 2 months exactly since I started a very strict carnivore diet. I'm down 55 pounds in 55 days. I've never done anything like it. I never used to have a problem with, it started getting put on. So anyway, and I've learned a lot in the last couple of months about, I never paid attention to this aspect of preparedness. And I was put under a lot of conviction by a few people that sent me some emails and some really, you know, nice folks on YouTube saying, if you don't put down the Twinkies, Buster, you're going to die. So they say, why are you breathing so hard? And I just kept saying, whatever. I can just block them on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But really, I got way too heavy. And so my diet was horrible. I ate everything. So anyway, I said, I'm going to do this. I know that high protein has worked for me in the past. So I did a little research and got a little help. I actually, first time in my life, I ever hired somebody to help me do anything. And this was a health coach. This guy sent me an email. I didn't know him. I said, all right, I got to do something. Took it as a sign. I'm going to do it. And so he has been very helpful. Guy out, Matt Hickson out in Washington. Anyway, the links are in that video. So I hired him and just some simple pointers. I was already motivated, ready to do this, sick and tired of being a fat walrus. And so I'm down 55 pounds. I mix a lot of concrete, use a lot of, for what I do. And I've been carrying around a bag of Quikrete, 80-pound bag, extra weight, and that will kill you when it's 100 degrees out and you're working outside all day. So I'm just tired of feeling bad. That's all. I mean,
that's awesome. But I tell you, you're talking about extreme. The carnivore diet is the most extreme.
And, you know, it's amazing. Do your research. I'm not going to tell you. I mean, I'm an evangelist for carnivore, but I am strict carnivore, absolutely zero carbohydrates. Humans do not require, I mean, I could go off on this right now, being fat adapted and not being on needing carbohydrates. This really affects food storage. I mean, this is crazy. What I've experienced in the last 2 months has been mind boggling. I don't even talk to you about the toilet paper. That's another whole angle. but do some research on carnivore. Do some research on carnivore. It's absolutely amazing. I'm eating in quality meats, animal products from nose to tail, from snout to tail, everything, animal product. And it is absolutely amazing, the nutrition. I know there's so many people like, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. I'm like, I was ignorant of all of these things that I've learned in the last 2 months dealing with the diet. But in terms of preparedness, I was going to get to the point where if I had to bug out and carry my bug out bag and actually carry all my stuff for 2 miles, it'd be bad.
Right.
So started biking again. I just got to drop the pounds. So I'm shooting for 100 plus pounds to lose. And I already feel great. I've been working like crazy. I've lost 55 pounds. Wow. So just imagine just losing 55 pounds and going up and down a ladder, which I've been doing for the last 3 days. Totally different. Awesome. Anyway,
awesome. So I'm doing Atkins. I don't think I've been doing it quite as long as 55 days. That didn't look on my calendar. I think I just completed 1 month. So I must have started after you. But the bike, are you using the motorized bike?
I am. I'm using an e-bike. And I find... And it's great. You can pedal as hard as you want. What I'm finding for people that are I'm 54. I'm finding a lot of my customers are my age or older, and to put them on a bike is going to kill them, or they're just not going to get on it because they're so discouraged.
Right.
But you get on an e-bike and you can actually, this is fun. I got a heart rate monitor. You can adjust. You don't have to violate the heart rate. You can go, use your accelerator, use your pedal assist, whatever. I'm absolutely amazing, but it's fun to get out to see everything. I use it as a prepper. It's a bug out vehicle. There's so many cool things about e-bikes. I've just been really fascinated by them. I just got a Rad Runner. It's kind of an ugly looking moped type bike, and it'll wear you out. and you can go a lot farther. So I get to see a lot more, you know, just went for 26 miles. Get a fat
charge.
What? Yes. Because I'm pedaling, because I'm working. Yes. And I did kill the battery, but I got 26 miles at 300 pounds. I got 26 miles. That's pretty awesome. You put, do the same on a regular bicycle and you're probably going to be dead.
Yes.
If you're not used to biking like that. Anyway, the e-bike, that's a subject I'd love to talk about too. But we have too many subjects.
We can hit that then. So the next thing I want to talk about is I literally got two emails in the last 7 days about solar generators. And so you are king of solar and water and everything off grid. So people are asking me, should I buy one of these, like, you know, Jackeries? Should I build my own? What's the best route? And if they buy a system, what's the best system? And if they build their own, what's some directions for them and what they expect?
It took me 2 years before I would even sell a small solar portable generator. Let me just put it that way. They're so mismarketed and everybody lies about the size of their system, how long it will last, the battery capacity. And a lot of people don't realize for preppers, we want something to last long term. And a lot of these solar generators are really emergency generators to get you through the night, keep your freezer from losing temperature, refrigerators. And they aren't sustainable. The only real power that you have is in the solar panel or in the fuel source that you've stored for your generator where you can recharge the battery. So when you're thinking about power, they misadvertise. They'll compare that solar generator to the Honda, you know, EU2200. And, you know, there's a lot of shock and awe advertising, a lot of lies. They all work. So let me just say that whether you name the Jackery, there's the Blue Eddy, there's Yeti, there's whatever, there's a ton of them, the Titan, the EcoFlow Delta. I have like four solar generators. Now they all work. I take one to work with me every time I leave. I put it in a Milwaukee packout box. I take it. We make coffee with it. We run tools. We charge our batteries for our power, for our cordless tools. We keep our cell phones charged. I'm putting a bunker together. I used it to run an impact wrench, an old electric impact wrench. So they're very useful. They're just not a long term. They don't have a lot of, there's not a lot of solar input to a portable solar generator. So they're just not going to produce a lot of power. So they work the same as your whole house solar system. You know, you have solar panels, you have an inverter, and you have a battery. And within that, you have all different types of solar panels, different quality inverters, and different battery chemistries. And so you go from the lead acid to the lithiums and everything in between. And you can, you know, I tell everybody it's great to get a solar generator. You know, the solar generator that I bought 8 years ago, I still use. It's running a freezer behind me. I have a solar generator that's running a Sundancer freezer. I bought it 8 years ago. It works great. It's old school, but it still works. It's right. Got solar panels are going to last for 25 to 30 years or longer. So get one. I'm not telling you which one to buy. Every time there's one that comes out, it's the latest, greatest, and it's better than the other one by so many amp hours, so many kilowatts, blah, blah, blah. We sell Titan and EcoFlow Deltas right now, but I'm not trying. I mean, I don't want this.
So on your website, you got two brands on your website right now.
I have the Titan as a brand on the website. The other one is I've done videos on that. The one that I take to the job site with me just to have some power. A lot of times our jobs are off grid. There's absolutely no grid where we're going to these undisclosed locations. There's right. No grid. So to have a little bit of power to keep our tools running to build this off grid system, I take one with me. We always have solar panels with us. So I just deploy a solar panel on the ground, leaning up against the building, and it keeps us in power for the week or 2 weeks that we're off site. So the solar generators, they all work. If you want to build one yourself, again, you need solar, you need an inverter of some type, and you need a charge controller to regulate the battery. And the battery can be, so you can do your own, you can buy all the pieces, the solar, the inverter, the battery, the charge controller, the regulator that keeps the solar battery from burning up. So you can buy those four components. We design those systems. We do them large scale. We do them now where they're stacked. And going off grid is easier, way easier than it has been. And So that'll lead it. We can talk about DIY solar, but solar generators, you know, there's a lot of competition. There's probably 25 of them on the market. And so, you know, they're all good. So I don't know if there's a specific question about a solar generator. I'd be happy to answer that. Go ahead.
Well, no, I would just, people just want, so would you recommend just to buy one? It's if you don't know, I mean, you have solar generators are pretty easy to set up. It's literally positive.
They are plug and play. They are plug and play. You can buy, the EcoFlow Delta's got two handles on it. You set it down, the plugs are standard. You can plug your solar panels in. I used one to charge. I did a little video charge on my e-bike because I want to have transportation that is sustainable. So I use electric golf carts, electric e-bikes, electric cars, and electric homes. So everything, I don't do propane. I mean, that's kind of my little hobby is everything electric. And the only thing I have that I can actually produce on my property is electricity from the sun or from gasifier. That's another subject. But the solar generator can maintain, I can literally charge my electric transportation with a solar generator. And it's just a pass through. It works awesome. So there's a lot of them on the market. You know, I do recommend that you get one because you know, a little bit of electricity goes a long way in keeping people sane, keeping the communication, everything that you use for batteries, keep it going, whether you're cutting wood with it. What do we have here? You're showing some bunkerage?
Oh, yeah. Look at that right there. I didn't know there's going to be an ad at the bottom. Let me get rid of that. But this is a project you're currently doing right now, isn't it?
It is. We are burying. Well, this is the delivery day of the big boy. This is an Atlas shelter. There's the generator pod. We're putting lithium batteries in that. So believe it or not, 25 feet underground, we're going to have a solar generator basically running this house underground. That's a big boy. That's 58 feet long. And when it's fully done, 68 feet long. And there's the hole part of it.
And you were telling me how that cost like $3,000 earlier.
It's about $2,800, yeah.
Like $250,000.
Yeah. I mean, it costs as much to install one as it does to buy one. And the owner of Atlas Shelters might argue with me on that one. But it costs a lot of money. For instance, yesterday we put 40 dump truck loads of 57 stone in that hole and compacted it so that it would no deflection on that tube. So yeah, it's very expensive to install. You're looking at $250,000. Now that's a big one. There's all different sizes. And we're kind of doing that as DIY. So if you really want a shelter, underground shelter, whether it's you can do a garage tornado shelter that goes under your garage. If you're building a house, it's pretty cool to put something under your house. There's a lot of different things. So if you got questions about that, we can fire it up. But we are installing shelters.
So let me ask you, since we've talked about that. So what do you think about people buying, container cars and burying them underground?
Do not do it. And you'll see the some of the shelters that look like shipping containers, same dimensions, basically, but they are reinforced every 2 feet with I-beams. So you have I-beams stitched all the way around in a grid to keep them from caving in. The shipping containers were only built to support weight vertically on their corners. They do not support any weight sideways. They got a wood floor. And so any of the panels, the corners are super strong, but they're not made. So, I've seen people bury them. People have done it just to do simple storage and they all cave in. They're all like, do not go in there. You're going to die. So it's not, don't do it. My bunker, and I'm going to do a video on my bunker. I have $200 into it. I bought an old fuel tank, any type of round, spherical, cylindrical structure is safe, right? A fuel tank buried in the ground, they're everywhere, is going to be safer than you putting a shipping container in. So do not do a shipping container unless you're a very good welder and can reinforce it.
So I'm going to get some shipping containers and bury them.
And then when they do it, it's a nightmare and you never go back in there and it's a mistake. Mm-hmm. So do not do that unless you have built a structure around it. You know, they're great to use. I have one, they work great, but not as a buryable container. They weren't designed to do that. So don't do that. Go round, go spherical. You saw that shelter. It's round for a reason. The square ones, the rectangular ones that they make today are so reinforced and gridded out that they can handle. They literally have 7 to 8 inch I-beams every 2 feet. Dang. So they can take the weight.
So I have seen some that they build. They do a concrete pad with center blocks, and then they drop the container ship down in the middle. And I'm like, why would you do that?
They're relying on the concrete for the structural strength, because you can build, like my root cellar is all, it's just like that. I have footings, I have concrete block walls and a poured concrete ceiling. And then you could put in that structure just because it's lockable. It's a metal, you can weld inside it, put shelves in it. And, you know, so there's reasons for doing that.
Okay.
But you just, yeah, they had to do the concrete block because it can handle the element better.
So when are you going to put your DIY video up on that?
DIY video on
your little shelter you're doing, your fuel.
Yeah, I mean, I've done parts of it. I need to do that soon. I did buy a door from Atlas Shelter. That's the only thing that I've got. I just couldn't help it. It's such a cool door. So it's like a submarine style, lockable, open from in both directions. Anyway.
It's got the wheel on it?
Absolutely. I couldn't help myself. I had to get one.
So what's some other alternatives? So people, you know, preppers aren't going to, a lot of preppers that I know aren't going to spend $250,000. Do you recommend, go ahead.
The concrete block, a storm shelter / cinder block. I mean, that's the first thing I built when I got my property here was a root cellar. And the root cellar has been a great storm shelter. I've got power in it. And it's just concrete blocks. I poured them, you know, and I poured them solid and I made a roof, and it just takes some time and labor. And that thing has just stood the test of time, and it's awesome. And okay. So anybody can save up by, you know, I just did the standard concrete cement blocks. So you can build a structure to store, to get out of the weather. I built as a root cellar, so it has a dirt floor, gravel floor, so it's high humidity for storing root crops. If you just want storage, you can pour that floor. And if you bring power, you could do a dehumidifier. You could do a cool box, which is a modification of an air conditioner to make a walk-in cooler. You could make that entire space in a giant walk-in refrigerator. So there's a lot of options. I remember we built ours, and we'd have a tornado warning here. We'd go down, take the kids down in there. We had television in it, I had a lot of labor in it, but just this price of concrete blocks and about maybe 4 yards of concrete. Wow. So you do not have to spend a ton of money to have a shelter. You just don't. You can buy a septic tank at a plastic septic tank. Dig the hole and put it in there. I fit inside a plastic septic tank. If you really wanted to hide something, that sounded weird, I know.
That's funny. Jokes.
If you want underground storage to hide, to cache some items, food, whatever, they work great. And that's probably the most inexpensive way to go that's not ever going to deteriorate.
A plastic septic tank, and you fit right in one, you said. Okay.
We got videos of the ones that looks like, never mind. It looks like Jonah and the whale.
In a sense, a small cache is something like, even like 55 barrel drums, you could do that, right? Or no?
Definitely do that. 55, anything, PVC tubes with caps on the ends.
Yep.
Glued on the bottom, you know, caps. So, there's a lot of caches that are simple to make. You're not going to spend a lot of money. Yeah. So this, what we're doing, underground stuff goes from the simple tube in the ground all the way up to the giant tube in the ground. And then, you know, to missile silos that people are, you know, whatever, spending crazy amount of money on. So I don't like being underground. It doesn't bother me. I'm not claustrophobic. We're working in these things. But I don't like being able, I like being outside to defend my location. That's just personal preference. It's a lot of money. I'd rather put my money in video cameras and surveillance and motion sensors than.
And grenade launchers.
Those two, Modus and the whole nine yards. Anyway.
Awesome. Okay, that's good. So also people, you know, they're heading for the hills, they're looking for land. Some people just want to go off grid. So I have a friend that bought, I think it's like 18 acres of land, and he bought a container ship and just dropped it on the property. So the only thing on the property is a container ship, and he stores some tools and things in there. But he wants to build over time like an off grid place. Is off grid hard? Is it expensive? Should everyone do it? Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
No, not the last thing you said about should everyone do it. I mean, it's very stressful when you've put everything in this one system and that battery. You've spent a lot of money on a system and something tweaks or fails or whatever, and then everybody's looking at you like you don't have any power. So if you have grid power, I tell people use the grid while it's available. The grid, when you start making your own electricity, you find out how expensive it is or how little your electric bill really is. Try to reproduce that same amount of power for the money. We have a great deal with the power. Most people do. So going off grid is very doable now. We are actually taking complete new construction homes off the grid. No grid power, never going to have grid power. They don't want grid power, but they want all the creature comforts and they want to survive in style. So we're doing that now. The equipment has come that far. We can put enough solar. And the key is the appliances, picking appliances that are soft start. The compressor doesn't hammer on. So air conditioning, heating, pumps, everything that has a motor compressor, if it's not a soft start, it doesn't have any locking rotor amps to get it started, which is where 60% of the power in the United States goes, starting motors. If you can do inverter type where they start at zero and they ramp up, then you have a better chance of going off grid. So the best money spent is not on solar, not on batteries, not on generators, not on me coming to install it, but on the appliances that you plan on that off grid. So yeah, I know hundreds of people literally that have bought the piece of property, dropped the shipping container on there so they'd have some lockable storage. So when they go to the property, they begin to work on their project. That's where I love to come in on the project is this is what you need to do as a system. Be thinking about how the water affects the hot water, affects the power to run your refrigerator, and everything comes together and how you're going to heat and cool this and store and just take advantage of the resources that are on the property. Elevation, solar insulation, the amount of solar that you have, which trees you should cut, going through the whole plan from security to power generation, taking a systems approach, which I've always done. I'm just getting better at it because we do this every day. And it's fun. For me, it's a challenge. Like a new property, guy drops off the shipping container just like your buddy has done. That's like, yes, clean slate. Where I hate is when I got into a situation where people just, they buy a piece of property that's not good.
Right.
They're in a hole. They're on the north side of a hill. So their energy requirements are going to be twice as if they were on southern exposure side. Their water is below them. They have they're not taking advantage of any natural resources. They just bought the property because they got a good price or they like the view. A lot of mistakes are made in the purchase of the property, but once you have it, you got to make the best of it. Mm-hmm. And we do what we can.
You said one thing that I learned when I was working at the electronic company and the robotic company that we talked about earlier before we started. You said one thing that I think blows people their minds when you say it. Do you know what you said? 65% of all power in the U.S. is used by motors.
Yes, starting motors.
Starting motors. All power in the U.S. at starting motors.
Yeah, it really is. So, I mean, that's why you have a 200 amp service at your home. 200 amps times 240 volts, you're at 50,000 watts at your disposal. So that, let's talk about the solar generator again. When you buy that solar generator that is a 1,000 watt or 2,000 watt solar generator, and people are like, I want to stay warm, I want to have a hot shower, I want to take care of the 50 people in my group, and they buy a 2,000 watt Jackery or Titan or 3,000 watt Titan. You're used to having 50,000 watts at your disposal. I can start anything. My compressors, I have my air compressor works. I can weld. I can run my home. I have 50,000 watts. You know, there's houses that we've come to now have 400 amp services, 600 amp services. They have 100,000 watts at their disposal. And now they want to buy a solar generator to run the world. It does come down to math. They just have never done the math.
Right.
And they're kind of embarrassed once they run the numbers that they see, oh, now I understand. And I only have 4 hours during the day, depending on where you live, to actually make enough power using the sun. On average, where I am, it's 4 hours. You know, if you go farther north, you're in trouble getting down to 2-3 hours, getting to Canada. If you're doing your calculation, I have 2 hours to do 24 hours worth of work. So the math becomes very depressing, and your little solar generator is not going to save you.
Okay. Next question. So we covered, I think it's funny. If you guys go to his YouTube channel, in his last project he was doing, it's the same brand that you were burying, but you called it a wine cellar throughout the videos. I thought that was hilarious. I enjoyed listening. It's a wine cellar. And I actually told people, and they go, really? They're burying a wine cellar? I'm like, but my question is with that. I would think that what you're doing requires a lot of permits. Is that true?
Are you going to get me in trouble now?
No,
there's no permitting of an Atlas shelter that I know of.
Okay. So if someone's doing off the grid one on their own property, there's no permitting on that or anything.
No. And could they get in trouble? Yes. I leave it at that. You know, there's,
okay.
I mean, it's a house underground. So people are living in this, you know, there shouldn't be some things in there like propane. There should never be propane around any underground shelter. There's septic, there's sanitation that has to be dealt with. So everything, we have water, power, electricity, you know, you name it. So, yeah.
Okay. We'll go to the next question. because my friend he wants to dig and put something in there, and he's like, what permits? And I said, you do it and bury it, and they won't find it. But it doesn't work that way. So good. No,
and this is the other thing in choosing a property. There are some amazing counties in our country that don't require building permits. And a lot of people don't realize that. You live in North Carolina. Sorry if I gave that away, which I think you told everybody. So sorry.
It's fine.
It's a very controlled state from permitting. But there's other states I go into. There's no permits. It's like, permit? What do you need permit for? Just build it. And it's wonderful.
Right.
So in choosing a piece of property, I highly recommend you choose a place. You know, we're not trying to cut corners. Everything should be built to code. They should be the latest NEC 2017 code for electrical building codes, follow international building codes. You should do everything to code just for your safety, but find a place that doesn't have inspections. How about that?
Yeah.
That's one of the best moves financially that you'll ever make. A lot of people don't realize it.
Right. I'm in a, was it a 300 square foot box that I built in the middle of the woods right now?
Oh, yeah.
And I put it right on the property line. The codes in my county state, that if you have a structure on the property line, it can't have permanent power.
Oh.
If it has permanent power, I have to be 10 feet off the property line.
Yeah.
So, and I don't have, these are the county codes. These are, I'm not the homeowners.
Right.
And so I have some big old butt extension cord that runs to my house that is literally, I plug it in if I need it. And that gets me past that. What?
You need a solar generator.
Well, okay. Here's another thing that's sad. Being the CEO of Sunoven, my entire property is covered in trees. There's only 1 6x10 spot on my property where I can actually use my solar oven and cook stuff. And it's in the front yard about 12 feet from the road.
Gotcha.
We hate it because of that. It's my wife's house. Anyway, she loved the house and the land. So anyway.
So you're in that's classic. I mean, there's people that have a piece of property that isn't conducive to preparedness, meaning it's not sustainable for you to live there. You have other options, I know.
Right. Yeah. This is not where I'm staying in case something happens. But my also, and you know, people hate me for this. I'm not the green thumb. I don't need to grow food until there's a die-off, and then I can go choose my land wisely. Does that sound really bad?
It sounds really bad.
It does. No, but we have a retreat and we got 10, you know, people that are green thumbs. I'm going to let them grow the food. And then if an EMP happens, you know, a year later, we can go and choose our house with the land.
If that's your approach.
90% of the people are going to die.
Well, that's very depressing. We're in a business to keep people alive.
Right. Yes.
So we should prepare and find a place that you can live and take care of as many people as possible.
So let's talk about off-grid water. I've actually heard some people talking about off-grid water.
Yes.
So I discovered something that you have been using for 16 years.
20 plus? The RAM?
Yes.
Yes.
And I tell people there's a device that you can pump water without no electricity. And they look at me like, what? But you that's one of the tools that you use to move water. Right. And tell us about the one on your farm there.
Yeah, it's been 21 to almost 22 years. A hydraulic ram pump was invented in the late 1700s by the same gentleman who invented the hot air balloon, Gustave Montgolfier, Frenchman that started the hydraulic ram pump. And there's a lot of iterations. You can do a lot of research on it. And but mine's been pumping water. It lifts water 100 feet in elevation, filling a pond in the woods. I used to use it to water my chickens and cows, but it's been running for a long time. There's a lot to the subject. There's double acting ram pumps where you can use dirty water or groundwater like a pond or a stream to actually pump clean water, spring water. So let your falling water be the energy source to run your spring water. You can pressurize it. This doesn't work for everybody. It's just not this magical perpetual motion machine. But if you have the right fall and elevation change, you can take that falling water, if there's enough volume, and run this pump. And they're amazing. So it's the closest thing that I've ever gotten to a perpetual motion machine. It's literally been running for 21 years. I took it out of service to clean it, to paint it, put it back in, but it's still thumping away. The company went out of business. That's you and I have talked.
I know. We wanted to buy them, the people at Sunoven, and they're out of business.
It has changed hands multiple times. It used to be in Virginia. Last iteration was in Pennsylvania. Been around since the 1800s, Rife Ram. And so I am making one. So I didn't tell you about it, but I am building my own based on, you know, my experience of how to start a ram, how to install a ram. I've installed them for farms and people with this. So I am actually getting one. I am machining one and building my own custom ram pump.
Now, I see these little ones on YouTube out of PVC and all that.
Yeah, there's PVC and I've built them, and a lot of, you can build a ram pump, but they have limited capability. Like I said, I want a ram that lasts forever. Mine has run for 21 years. Wow. Find a mechanical device that runs for 21 years with no maintenance. That's what I'm building. But it's a niche. Not many people can take advantage of it. You got to have that falling water. And but if you have enough volume falling at least 5 feet on your property, you can pump water at least 10 times higher than that. Dang. So if you need to get water up to your gardens, up to your chickens, cows, goats, whatever, the hydraulic ram pump can save you a lot of energy. Mine pumps 1,500 gallons a day up 100 feet. Can you imagine taking 2 5-gallon pails full of water and carrying it up a 100-foot hill and doing that 30 to 300 times a day?
So can you catch enough water? Let's say that you do have a spring, and the spring isn't enough to really make it work because it's just a small stream. Can you pond it up and then create a fall and do it?
You can, but that's just an experiment. That's not sustainable because the ram will stop running and then you got to go reset. It's kind of a pain. So when you have a low volume off-grid water source, I recommend use solar. You know, it kind of balances it out. You don't have 24-hour-a-day sunshine, and you don't have a 24-hour-a-day water supply. So you let that water, collect overnight, pump it all day, and it complements each other. And, you know, the hotter it gets, the more sun you have, the more you can pump, the more water you need. Solar water pumping is awesome. So from mechanical ram pumps to solar pumps, there's a lot of options, a lot of capabilities. You can pump water 800 feet. In elevation, not a problem. People don't think you have the capability. Yes, you do. You can pump water for miles.
So I see some people putting about wind turbines or even steam engine, but...
Great. All of it's awesome. But where we are, the wind is not consistent enough. Your time. Hands down, do solar first. Make solar your energy source, your hub. You can add wind to that hub. You can add steam engines, gasifiers, hydroelectric, thermoelectric generators, organic Rankine cycles. You can go crazy, but to have sustainable power, you're never going to beat that dumb rock. What I call a solar panel, it's just dumb rock. It's silicon wafers. There's no moving parts. It's amazing what you can get out of a solar panel today. So that should be your hub. That's where you should start. Now you can add all these supplements. A hydro, you can do, you know, all three, and generators add to that mix too. But solar should be where you start. And if it's not enough because you got too many trees, then add a generator. The generator can start up and charge, especially a lithium ion battery. I can take that battery from dead to full in an hour or two, shut that generator down. But you got to have the hub be solar. That's just practical experience.
This has something to do with it, but it's kind of not, it's kind of a little corner here. I remember a few years ago, there were some government programs that could help people.
I'll do solar.
Do solar and move water on their farm. Is that program still available?
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about, yes, under the USDA, there is a program called EQIP. It's EQIP, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program. And they have money allocated to help homesteaders and farmers it's for rotational grazing for sheep, goats, and cows. And so so that you rotationally move your livestock around so your forage comes up, as opposed to just opening up your entire property and having your animals graze and just trample everything down. So there's money available through the NRCS, the National Resource Conservation Service, which is EQIP's under that. So just Google NRCS EQIP if you want to find out the program in your state. In your state is broken into watersheds. You know, your state's broken into counties. It's also like we're in South Carolina, it's broken into 32 watersheds.
Wow.
So that water is controlled. There's all these government groups. And if there's money available, it used to be available, they would put in a well, they'd pay for your cross fencing, they pay for your pipe. They pay for your water system to, you know, basically start farming. And if you're doing it for the first time, you can sign up as a young farmer. It doesn't matter if you're 85 years old. You can sign up as a young first-time farmer, and they'll put you to the front of the line. The other program, now you bring it up, is the High Tunnel Initiative. If you are into growing food year-round or getting ahead or having another season, wanting to grow tomatoes in January, there's a High Tunnel Initiative under the same NRCS EQIP program, and they will fund and build and give you the money I still don't understand it, but they do give you money for that high tunnel. So it can be a $5,000 to $10,000 incentive for you to grow food.
That's awesome.
It's a really awesome program. I've had several customers do those NRCSs, and I've come in and helped them with the water afterwards.
It's right. So you can steer, if someone emails you, you can steer them, but after they need to come back and hire you to do it.
Yep. Exactly. I enjoy the water. Helping farmers grow food is it's just kind of a fun thing. So
yep. That's weird. So let's go right into that. So we're nowhere near close to finish, but you do a lot of consulting. So people hire you to look at land pre-purchase.
Yes.
After they purchase, which you don't. Well, then you're stuck with what you know.
Yes.
You got to make what they have work. Yes. And then people like you're working on these big monster underground. I mean, they've lived there for a while, and now they just want to do some improvement.
Yeah, we cover the whole gamut from before, during, and after. And new construction is great to get in on because then we can save you a lot of money. Because retrofitting a house for solar, it's easier. Say you're wiring a house up and you have your main electrical panel with all your breakers. If you, at that time, before you do that, have your electrician add another panel, which we call a critical loads panel, that has, I want to be able to do laundry. I want to run my well pump.
Right.
I want to have lights enough to travel. I want to run my ham shack.
Yeah.
Do all these things and check it off, and you have about 12 top 12 list of things that you want in that critical loads panel. It costs no more money than about $70 to run those circuits into your critical loads panel and not into your main panel. So you have two electrical panels. This critical loads panel is going to be serviced by your generator or your solar generator or your hybrid system or your steam engine. I don't care. But if you build your house ahead of time and you think, you know, one of the things that's always overlooked is a mechanical room. Everybody thinks about the kitchen. Everybody thinks about the living space. The mechanical room is your best money spent. Put all your ugly stuff, your bladder tanks, your solar generators, your batteries, your furnaces, whatever, wherever you live, depends on where you live will affect your mechanical room. But if you design that, you can put all your ugly stuff in that room. And if it's designed right, that's what we did. We designed the mechanical room and all the conduits. Just bringing in cheap PVC conduit into that room, stubbed up and ready to go, will save you tens of thousands of dollars having somebody come back and make your house more sustainable.
I have that in my house currently, and we love it. Now, the generator, I bought a tri-fuel generator. I can't do solar just because
so great approach is legit. That's fine. Yeah.
So we have a try and it's not hooked up permanently. It's one I roll out and connect. So
there's no problem with that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of those that we roll out and connect to the solar system because they couldn't afford enough solar at the time or the battery. And they just use that portable generator to charge that battery back up. I've got a guy in LA. He can't put up two solar panels, but he's in downtown LA. And he wants to have enough battery to survive 7 days of rioting, for example. And he wants to be able to live and have some creature comforts for his family. So he's putting a giant lithium battery in the basement. And that generator he has can charge that. And he can cruise for 7 days silent. So there's a lot of strategies when it comes to generators and batteries. You know, the old hippies used to grow marijuana. They had a diesel generator buried in the ground, growing their marijuana, and they had some batteries. They didn't have solar. So you can take and they were very successful at what they did.
So I threw a question up on the screen. Can you see that? So you know I was going to go there. So tried to get EMP Shield on my show three times and three strikes you're out. So I didn't let them, and you wanted to be on that because you had some questions for them.
Absolutely.
I know Tim from Oh, Groucho, he was dying to be on it.
Yeah, good old Tim. Gotta love Tim.
And so,
good guy.
Here's the question. I don't even have to ask it. One of our viewers list asked. So, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, your audience is pretty large now with PrepperNet. For them not to come on and blow you up three times is like, well, what are they? They're saying a lot by doing that. They're shooting themselves in the foot. By doing that, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, preppers understand EMP. EMP for most people is not even on the radar. It's not even in their vocab. So for them not to come on is ridiculous because there's a huge market for them. I get this question all the time too. What about EMP shield? What about EMP shield? So I don't know. I've talked to them a couple of times. So we sell an EMP hardened system called a Solark. Okay. They don't believe EMP shield is good. They have an EMP simulator. Okay. So they test their product. Their product's been tested to 140 times of being blasted at 150 kilovolts per meter. Okay. That's a nuclear blast, direct blast, and their product withstands that 140 times. So EMP Shield came along and said, our system works too. And so they put it in a device and they blasted it. Okay. But that doesn't matter. It's like you have to hook it to something to really prove that your system is EMP. Just because your gizmo survived the blast, that doesn't mean what it's connected to. If it's connected to my laptop, did the laptop survive the blast? I don't care about this box.
Right.
Does it survive? You know, I could put a doorknob in there with it and the doorknob survived the EMP. But, you know,
Keep talking.
So the EMP shield, I don't know. I mean, I'm people that talked against the EMP shield before have lawsuits against them. So I don't really want to go down that road. There it is. There, you know, the first iteration, you know, from what I saw, there he goes. He's got one. And they've made one for free. Different. The first generation, I know people that took it apart and a midnight solar EMP, an SPD, a suppression device would blow the doors off of the first EMP shield. What is it today? I know they've got all these military specs. Yeah, there it is. Save it. Prove it. Come on the show.
So, and the interesting thing is, and because you know,
this is the other thing, Forrest. I just want to say this. I know Dr. Arthur Bradley.
That's where I was going.
Solark and EMP Shield. And I got in the middle of all three of these groups and I said, would you please stop with the prideful battle? Can you make different products that could complement each other, but they won't play together? Okay. So these three entities that I said, hey, look, I'm just the middleman having millions of people ask me, not millions, but a lot of people ask me questions about this. And I have, you know, been involved with EMP for the last 12 years.
Right.
And I'm like, guys, if this is a whole house EMP protector, and then you're building an EMP hardened system that protects the devices within this, you're not in conflict, but nobody's playing together. Nobody's playing nice here. And so everybody's, you know, I just can't believe this box. People are selling this box, adding it to their other products, telling people they have an EMP hardened system. It's an absolute lie. So it's not, it's a lie.
Well, I will say that I have the one on my vehicle because I installed it in 3 minutes. If it works, I have no idea.
Tim had fun with that one. So Tim was tearing that apart. So yeah. I mean, if it's a product, we should all have an EMP shield. Let me just say, we should all have an EMP shield. I will install one tomorrow on my house and buildings and structures. Just if it works, does it work? I don't care that you have a military spec. I have military spec on EMP bags that aren't very good.
Right.
Though, so, you know, I need to nest 5 or 6 of them to really know. So there's just because you have a military spec stamped on your product does not mean it's going to work for what we're trying to mitigate in an E1, E2, E3 event. So does Dr. Peter Pry endorse it? Who's been the head of Impact America for a long time? Does he?
I don't know. I'm aware of.
Yeah, those guys are good on marketing. You know, I'm okay. Prove me wrong. I'm fine with, you know, I can be from.
Want it to work.
We want it to work. EMP Shield, if you're listening, yes. We want it to work. Send it to us. You know, and but I know a guy. I know somebody who can put it in a blaster and simulate it and see if it works. Yep. And that's what we need to do. I mean, if it ends up being, you know, $20 worth of dirt, as my friend says, of electronics and silicon and chips, and it's like, you know, $10 and you're trying to make $500 off of it, then that's sad. I don't know what the motivation is.
Yep.
So anyway, if I get a call tomorrow, man, if I got to call my lawyer tomorrow for it, you're getting the bill.
You know, Arthur Bradley was sued by EMP Shield. And they, I mean, so we know Arthur Bradley. He was at Prepper Camp. Did a no? Heritage Life Skills. And
go ahead.
And I trust him a little bit more than anyone else because he does work for NASA and is like our EMP expert for NASA.
Yeah, he's got a very strong track record. I don't know the whole thing. You know, he just came out on YouTube disproving the EMP shield. Like I said, EMP shield has had some iterations. So have they made an improvement from the first model that he tore apart? So he can't say anything. I don't know. The lawyers got involved. We do Solarks. Solarks, the only EMP hardened system that I know of on the market. And that's what we do. We hope. I don't go around with a EMP gun and try to blast it. I don't have the, you know, we just hope that there is no EMP is the worst scenario, hands down.
So with that said, what does your device protect? The whole house or just the solar system?
The solar system. All right. The solar system includes the panels, the inverter, the entire, all that plus what it's connected to. So say your laptop or your microwave or whatever you have is what is powered by your solar system. So there's an EMP surge ferrite core suppressor attached close as it can be to that device. And there's EMP suppressors at the solar panels. Everything comes to the inverter and is basically knocked down to a shielding effectiveness level that everything on board, the printed circuit boards, can handle. Gotcha. So they took an approach and a military approach so that the system would work before, during, and after an event. It's not a Faraday cage approach. And a lot of people say, you can't Faraday cage one of these systems. Our solar can be 1,000 feet from the house. You can't Faraday cage your property. So, or your car.
And there are big antennas out there too.
The EMP shield works. Prove it, guys. Prove it. Don't tell me it has a military spec. It means nothing.
You know, the reason he said he couldn't come on last week was because they were doing a big project with the government.
Yeah, they're hooked in with the government. There's big bucks.
Yep.
There's big money. You know, to get a GSP contract for that thing. I hope it works. If it works and saves lives and helps the government and the military, awesome. But I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of people that have them, and they're hoping that it helps their system. But
my last question on EMP shield: can you come install this from my house?
you strip the wires for us. You just put them all in one wire nut, and there you go.
Next thing I want to anything that you want to talk about the bike real quick, because the next thing I want to talk about is groups, because you have a different kind of thought process on groups a little bit than I do, and I want people to hear that.
I don't know how much different it is. I mean, we both agree that we're not lone wolves, and then we need all right, so we both agree on the group. How we do groups might be a little bit different. You know, I'm the infrastructure guy, making sure that you're able to pull security. You got a good night's sleep. You're clean. You're well fed. I'm focusing on infrastructure that allows you to be a contributing member of the group. So you mentioned bikes, e-bikes. You're talking about bikes.
Yeah, your e-bike, because you love that thing. I remember at Prepper Camp last year, you were looked at the one, it was $4,000 or something.
Yeah, it was expensive.
You're like, oh, dude, man, you need to go ride that bike.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for anything two wheels, dirt bikes, mountain bikes. I like bikes. But for sustainable transportation, again, this goes back to solar. What can I produce? I can produce enough power. And for my golf cart, I have electric golf cart. So everything I do is 48 volts. I have a 48 volt house system, 48 volt golf carts, 48 volt e-bikes. So I can sustain and charge every battery with solar. So my golf cart right now, my roof is solar, and I'm charging that battery with a boost converter, and I can go 10 miles with the golf cart and haul a lot of stuff. So just think about trying to get, maybe your bug out location is within that travel distance. You have silent transportation, can carry a lot of weight, and you can get you there. E-bikes are another way to bug out, just being able to go the range. You know, I can go 26 to 30 miles on my bike. That's a long ways to go, and I'm not dead when I get there. I can haul a lot, baskets, and carry stuff. So e-bikes, anything to do with a motor and wheels is fun. Go ahead.
Do they charge while you paddle? as well?
You know, that was a kind of a, no, they don't. They're actually, it's better to have a bicycle not do that. You want it to be freewheeling so you can take advantage of going down a hill. You don't want it to be stopped. You're like, I need all that. If you, it's like, how do you get the best gas mileage in a car? And you play that game, you know, I can double my mileage if I know how to drive and I know how to use elevation. Same with a bicycle. You don't want it to be regenerative braking. And a car is different. You have all this mass, and as it slows down, it charges the battery. That's a different story than a bicycle. Bicycle, you need it to be a little lighter. You need it to be a lot lighter. So, but the bikes are great. Pedal assist is an amazing feature. So e-bikes are just another source. We went with Rad Bikes, the cheapest e-bike. They just make millions of them, and it's been tough as nails. And we just have a lot of fun with it. And my son and I are getting another one, and we just, you know, the golf cart's another great thing for, you know, can you hop on your golf cart and be silent and drive 10 miles? And it's got a solar panel on it, so it recharges and go another 10 miles.
Right.
So anyway, so I don't know what else you want to know about e-bikes. There's a lot of them out there now.
Well, I threw a question up there because I already know the answer.
It's got Prepper Camp. So, is that Robert Bader? Hey, Bob, how you doing?
He said he wants you on a show or something, or he wants you on a show or something earlier.
Oh, I'm not. No, I cannot go. This is the first year I'm not going to Prepper Camp. I have a conflict. I'm taking a course. It's called a NABCEP. It's a National Board Certified Solar Installer. I've been installing solar forever, but I don't have my NABCEP. So when it comes to filling out paperwork for customers, I cannot. I have to ask a friend or a couple to sign the papers because I don't have that certification. They don't acknowledge my engineering degree. I have to have certification. So it's in conflict with Prepper Camp, and I keep blowing this off. So I apologize. And
you got one more question from Bob there.
I hope you will join a prop. Oh yeah. I have so much to say in that for us. I'll behave, but
no, we're going to hit that in a little bit.
Great.
So we did group. So your group though is more of a community group.
My group is not as close knit as some groups. There's groups that get together every week and they eat together. They live together. They do a lot of things. I am not home enough to have a group that's that close knit. So I still believe the groups need to be the neighborhood, the neighbors, and get to know your neighbors. So you're going to have to band together. What questions about groups? I mean,
that's it. I just wanted, you have a little, I mean, mine is a close knit group of, you know, a lot of people, and we train together, not as much as we used to by any means, but, and we're going to go away. And we're going to defend this area. And if you come, we're going to just blow you up with dynamite and grenade. I'm kidding. But we would never have anything like that.
No.
But and yours is more open. I mean, more, you got your neighbors and you're kind of like, you're not moving.
Yeah, I'm not moving. I mean, if I die, to die is to gain. I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
So that's my perspective of preparedness. I mean, I'm not trying to survive something that I'm not going to be here for, but that leads us into a Bible discussion. I want to be a resource. I want to be helpful. I want to be charitable. I don't want to blow everybody up. Obviously defense.
We're just going to blow bad people up.
Right.
Everybody. Okay.
Right. Good people become bad people really quick when they're hungry. Good right. People become bad people very quick when they're hungry.
Okay, so we've covered everything, and so then I'm going to ask one more. Let me ask this question, and then we can take some questions from everyone in the room there, but not yet. So my last question is, I know you're a pastor. We're a pastor, and you really walk a faith, and you share your faith. And, you know, the Bible somewhat, except when it comes to end times. I'm kidding on that. But where do you see, where are we now in America? Where are we in Bible prophecy? What's your thoughts and feelings on all that?
Well, first of all, before we go into that and people get, you know, it's There's so many views. And the main thing is that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. He's the one who died on the cross. You know, I'm focused on the cross, on the blood, and salvation through faith alone in Jesus alone. And that's kind of where I stand. I believe in the Trinity. So we have so many different teachings today. The end times is full of crazy extra biblical teachings. And so a lot of people are being misled. And what the cool thing is, I'm not going to, let's see, because I go to all these different states, I meet a lot of different Christians. A lot of preppers are Christians. So I get to sit down with them and talk to them. So over the years, I've been able to just see what, you know, there's a lot of different beliefs. And I'm like, honestly, I don't want to read any extra biblical. I don't want to read the Harbinger. I don't want to see what Jonathan Cahn's up to lately. Tell me what's going on. This is the word of God. It endures forever. So yeah, I'm a student of the word, Ben, since I was saved in 1994. And everybody says that. Everybody says they get everything from the Bible. And so, you know, I'm going to be the same. I mean, I love the Bible. I study it every day. I taught it verse by verse. But I continue to learn, and I continue to work on what, you know, the Bible says, study, rightly divide the word. I don't want to be ashamed when I see Jesus. That's my main goal, not to, right. You know, not to convince you of my end times eschatological beliefs. I am going to appear before Jesus Christ at an event called the judgment seat of Christ, technically the Bema seat. It's a seat where rewards are given out. All sins were judged on the cross. Let me just say that. All sins were judged on the cross. But I have a final exam. There's a report card. When I appear before Jesus, it's not going to be me and Forrest being compared in any way. It's going to be me and Jesus. And he said, do this. The Apostle Paul said, do this so that you're not ashamed when you do go before Jesus Christ and have your life examined. And everything that you did selfishly and for yourself is what burned away as wood, hay, and stubble. And only the precious metals are left behind. The work that Jesus Christ did in and through you is what remains. That's the beautiful part of the body of Christ that remains. The bad stuff is gone. We're in glorified bodies. We're not going to sin anymore. It's just an amazing future that we have ahead of us. So I don't want to get wrapped around the axle at end times. I mean, I love end times prophecy, but I'm going to say something that's going to, you know, that I want people to think about, that we live in a time called Ephesians chapter 2 and 3 talk about the dispensation of grace. What Christians don't understand is the concept of grace. Mm-hmm. We were saved by grace. The work that Christ did was grace. How do we appropriate that to our lives? By faith. How do we live our lives? We're supposed to live them by grace through faith. How do we prove that we're Christians? Through grace, through faith. But we get hung up on prophecy. We get hung up on end times. We argue with everybody about end times. I do not believe we live in a prophetic time. I believe it's kind of like Christmas is coming. When do the Christmas decorations go up? The Christmas decorations go up around Halloween. So you know that Christmas is coming because Halloween is here. Does that make any sense?
Yep.
The event that I am talking about is when the body of Christ, the fullness of the Gentile, when the body of Christ is fully formed, then we're out of here. That's a debate we've had before about what the rapture is. I do not believe we live in a time of prophecy. That's the confusion of the church. It mixes prophecy and mystery. And so the dispensation of grace is the time that we live in. I want to know how to live. It's like we're talking all these, what should I do to prepare? I want to know how to live as a Christian in the time in which I live. Should I be living under the law of Moses?
No.
Was that for a different time? Should I be living like Abraham or Adam and Eve in the garden? Or pick another dispensation of time. Pick another time.
Right. People,
oh, he's a dispensationalist. I said, that's a Bible word. You know, read Ephesians.
Right. You know,
several times. Anyway, so I believe we live in a time of that the Apostle Paul in Romans through Philemon detailed out, and that's where we should be. We get hung up on extra biblical things. We go prophecy. We don't understand this concept of mystery. Just look it up. You don't have to agree with me. I'm excited to share, and I could share for 10 hours on the mystery of Christ, the mystery of the body of Christ, Jew and Gentile being put together, that has a beginning point. It's not Pentecost. And it has an ending point, which is the rapture. So that's a wonderful discussion.
And way more important than the end times and all that, for sure. So yes, absolutely. I mean, you know what though? Sometimes it's just fun to make fun that we do believe a few different things in our extra time for studying the Bible.
But why do we believe different things? Why do we believe? And I think one of the keys is the, you know, who's the book? Who's the audience of each book? A lot of people don't ask this question. Who's the book written to? Let me give you an example. The book of James. Who's it written to?
That would be the body, the Church of Corinthian. No. Who's it written to?
I'm putting you on a spot. That's not fair. Read verse one, and it'll tell you he's writing to the law. He's writing to the 12 tribes.
Okay.
He's not writing to the church. So Peter, who's he writing to? Why are those epistles called general Hebrew epistles? Because he's writing to the Jews. There's a distinction made between Jew and Gentile in the Bible, and I think that's a distinction that confuses everybody, and we mix prophecy in, and we're in the Gospels, and we got the wrong Great Commission. The church is a mess. Any amens in the house? The church is a mess when it comes to eschatology. But I'm thankful that Jesus gets that a childlike faith can save a person if they believe.
Yes, that's what's most important.
And that's salvation is most important. So please don't get wrapped around an axle about what I believe about the end times. The cross, the preaching of the cross, it's foolishness to those that are perishing. The cross is the key. The blood is the key. The Trinity is the key. There's the major things. But I mean, I love to go into details on the rest because it's my most, I could talk.
I know. Well, you are. I would hate to be in your congregation when you were a pastor. What's your longest sermon? 6-7 hours?
No, I did used to do prophecy updates on New Year's Eve. I do a prophecy update that would go start, and we'd start at 6 o'clock and go to midnight.
Wow.
And it was a Q&A session. We had fun with it, and we just ate together. It was a good time. And it's, you know, when the body of Christ can fellowship like that and have a great time, it is, you know how it is. It's fun.
So if you ever want Scott to talk to you and not stop, bring up water, solar, or Jesus, and you just grab a cup of coffee and sit back.
It's so much fun. And I'd be glad to. And I'm not going to try to convince you. I'm just excited to share what I have learned about prepping, about spiritual preparedness, most of all, and prepping. It's just all of it's fun. I can't wait till I'm out of this carcass and in a glorified body and can do all the things that Jesus has for us. You know, he said in the ages to come, he's going to show us his exceeding riches. Can you imagine? What does that even mean?
Right.
All of his riches, he's going to show us in ages to come. I mean, that's just mind boggling. So most of our life is yet forward. As a Christian, if you're not a believer, you should believe. And it's like, we're, you know, how do I plead with you to believe on the Lord Jesus Christ? Because, you know, I'm not below begging when it comes to that, because the alternative is Gehenna. It is the lake of fire. It is eternal separation from God. And that's not where you want to go at all. So you can prepare. You can be the best prepper. And I know some awesome preppers that blow me away in terms of their tactical gear and everything they're capable of doing, their military training. And they think they're going to survive the apocalypse. And they do not have a relationship with Jesus Christ. They are just living for this world. And that is a shame. You know, they're just living
for
this
world. All they're doing is extending their life.
That's all they're doing.
To die.
Yeah. That's sad. That is extremely sad. So there's
a mission, and it's not only to extend our life, but to help others and share God's love and God's promise.
Yeah, we choose life, right? I mean, we're choosing life. Life now, helping people prepare so they can live longer and take care of more people. But it doesn't mean anything. It means absolutely nothing if you can't survive when you have, you know, you do not. There's two, you go to the judgment seat of Christ or you go to the great white throne judgment. You do not want to be at the great white throne judgment because every knee will bow, every tongue will confess. The books will be open. You'll have nothing to say. Read it. Revelation 20, verse 11. Read it.
And when I'm being judged, God sees Jesus.
Yes.
He looks at me.
Covered in what? The blood.
The blood of Jesus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what we want. Because good thing, because we're wretched. We're not, we want him to see Jesus.
Yes, absolutely.
We are hypocrites. We are sinners. We have all the flaws and problems. Man, Forrest has, he just puts all his flaws out there publicly lately on this PrepperNet thing. But we're not, nobody here is better than, we don't think we're better than anybody. We're the worst, but we know that we're saved. And that's an amazing thing. And I can't explain that to you. How does that happen? It happens by faith. If you try to add anything, any work, any goodness, I talked to a guy the other day, he just tell me how, I hope I am. I hope I got enough good things. That doesn't work that way. You add anything to what Jesus did on the cross, you negate grace. You can't add anything to grace. Impossible. You negate it. The Bible defines that in Romans 11. You just destroy what he did for you if you try to add anything that you think you're capable of doing to it.
And it's a free gift to all.
To all. Yeah. Whosoever will call upon the name of the Lord will be saved.
Yep.
Does it get any simpler than that? Now, we have religion that argues with that. Every religion in the world is works-based. So I don't care if it's Catholicism. It doesn't matter what it is. Presbyterian, there's works based. Baptists have their works too. They just blast the Catholics for their works, but they have their works too. And they add, and please don't you add anything to what Jesus did, you're just treading upon the blood. You're just messing with the gift. As Forrest said, it's a free gift. How do you, if somebody's giving you a gift, what do you do? No, can I buy that from you? Can I pay for that gift? Christmas gift. No, you don't do that. You receive the, how do you receive the gift? You receive it by faith. That's it. There's nothing else you can do. But our flesh wants do's and don'ts. Give me a list of the 10 commandments to follow. Give me 613 codified laws. Give me all these rules that the new Hebrew Roots movement has made up, or my Baptist church has made up, or my Presbyterian church or the Catholic church. The flesh, our nature loves to follow a list. Here's our prepper list. These are the things you need to do to survive the end times. Okay, check, 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 check. And we do the same thing spiritually. Okay, I did communion. I accepted. I got baptized. I repented. Wrong. It's all, we just have a hard time living by faith.
Yes. Amen, brother. Man, do I need, where's the offering plate?
No.
I'm just kidding. Hey, that's great stuff. And you always come through on that. And I wanted you to touch your faith by for sure. So, hey, listen, everyone, we are going to take questions. You can ask him any question in the world. Just type in the word question and then like a colon or whatever, and then your question. That way we can identify it easy over there. But any question you have about your homestead, power, solar panels, and it's going to take them a second because it's always a little delay here, but we will get some questions. But yeah, that's good.
I haven't been paying attention to the comments. So hello everybody. I just saw Redneck Prepper there.
Redneck said hi. Yep. Question. Here's one.
What is the question?
Oh, insight on salt water and foul water purification.
Okay, salt water can't be done through filtration. You have reverse osmosis or distillation. So we have used a distiller using wood, trying to find an off-grid way to distill water. If you live in an area that has brackish water, you can use a distiller. Solar distiller, you can... I think the Sun Oven has a place here for distillation and making some purified water, plus the Wappy, and we can, Forrest has talked to you about that. And people that live on the ocean know this better than anybody, live in a sailboat or whatever, they use reverse osmosis and or distillers for taking care of the salt water.
This question is, why bother prepping? We all can't be part of the 144.
You can't be part of the 144 unless you're Jewish. It's 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes of Judah. Benjamin, Asher, Levi, Dan, Reuben, Issachar, Naphtali, Gad, Judah, Joseph, Zebulun. You have 12 tribes, and he names them all. They're named 20 different times in the scriptures and 20 different in different orientation. I'm a Gentile. As far as I know, my mother's not Jewish. That's how I know a Jew is a Jew, because your mother's Jewish. That's why we have Timothy. His mother was a Jewish. That's why he had to be circumcised. Imagine that later on in life, having to be circumcised. That's another whole subject. So we're not part of 144,000. That is a specific group that God uses once the church, the body of Christ, is removed, because there will not be a witness. He's never not had a witness upon the earth. The 144,000 will be the witness. Can you imagine 144,000 Apostle Pauls going throughout the earth sharing the gospel? It's going to be.
Right. So why do we prep?
So why do we prep? Because we choose life. We live as if today he's coming back to take me out, but I plan as if he's not coming back for 100 years.
Right.
That is the conundrum of a Christian. That is how, you know, Paul said, I'm ready to go, but I got to be here. I have this battle going on. A Christian battle is always, I already won. I've already won, right, because of the cross. But I need to live as if I'm, you know, what if he doesn't come back? This is the problem that the early church, the first church, the Jewish church in Pentecost made. They sold everything. Why was Paul on 4 missionary journeys? To give them money. They sold everything. They thought he was setting up the kingdom right then. And he didn't, because they didn't accept him as a nation, as a whole. And they sold their lands, their properties, everything, waiting on the Messiah. Guess what? He didn't come at that point. So Paul spends for his whole life getting killed, stoned, bitten, thrown in jail, to because he loved his Jewish brethren, to bail them out. And so he gained resources to bail them out. So we should learn from that lesson. That's not how we live. We don't live communally necessarily. We, you know, if you don't work, you don't provide for your family, you're worse than an infidel. So it's a day-to-day living, thinking ahead as if, you know, invest at real, you know, financially, take care of your family, leave a legacy behind for your family, take care of your loved ones, but know that in any second you could die and be with Jesus. I mean, that's how you have to live. You have to plan. Paul was a planner. He was a tent making planner, best evangelist ever. He's thinking ahead, but he's living in the moment.
Yep.
So you need to live in the moment, but think way far ahead. So why do we prepare?
Good stuff.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you go to, are you willing to travel to do consulting?
I do. Like I do a lot on the phone. I do a lot on the phone with some tools. I can simulate solar production on your property. I can do a lot. I can walk your property with you without being there at first. If it gets serious. So we usually start with a phone consultation to save you a lot of time. Like saves me time, saves you a lot of money. And if it's a serious project, yes. It's hard to travel. Our team has a lot of kids. We got, you know, probably 20 kids with the four guys. So it's hard to go too far from home these days. We go about 6 hours from upstate South Carolina.
Silicon salt batteries.
Yeah, there's a lot of battery chemistry. There is, there's a battery. It's a saltwater battery that's been out, and then they went out of business, and then they've come back. They're typically batteries that don't have a lot of surge capability, like a lead acid. A golf car, you take, you know, two 400-pound golfers golfing, and you punch that accelerator, and that lead battery responds and can carry that weight and do that work. A saltwater battery is a good storage device, but not a good surge device, meaning it can't just produce the kind of amperage that a lead acid or a lithium battery can produce. So they have a place. So what do you think of the Tesla batteries? I think Tesla is amazing. There's a lot of complications when it comes to off-grid. There's the controls, the water. Tesla went from DC to AC coupled. Tesla has hurt me in many ways, hurt a lot of business for people that install solar, because everybody hears Tesla, Tesla, Tesla. There's a lot better solutions for the money out there than Tesla today.
And this next question, what about gold and silver, God's money? Well, I don't know if it's God's money. God doesn't have money.
We're going to talk about my precious. So gold just messes with people. Gold and silver, you know, if you are an end times Bible, you know, then it's not going to help you.
Right.
I mean, eventually the economy will not work, because the Antichrist will control the economy, and gold and silver is not going to do anything for you. Yes.
Predicts that we'll throw the gold and silver out on the streets. Some of the people here will. It'll be that worthless.
I never, I never heard that. I don't. Just give me a verse on that one for us.
Okay. Now, we'll find it. Throw gold and silver out on the streets because it will be worthless. Someone look that up. The next question here.
Oh, can you give me a brand and model lithium battery replace a 48 volt amp-hour converter 30? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of lithium now. We're using Fortress and some stores on batteries. So if you got a question, just email me. We'll size it. There's a lot of options and a lot of, there's computer server battery sizes. So we need to match it to what you need.
Okay.
What's the first step in start using solar? Send me an email. I'll give you a quick pointer, some guidelines on, you know, where you want to start. If you buy a property in the future with a few acres, I have limited funds. Should I buy a property with a house already set up? Yes, absolutely. If you've never built, if you just want to do this pioneer thing where you want to buy raw land, cut all the trees down, build roads, septic systems, infrastructure, bring power lines in, you're going to be blown away by how much things cost. Lumber prices have doubled in the last 2 months. Double. Go buy a piece of plywood. I mean, we buy wood for some of our batteries. Anyway, if you're doing any type of building projects, you know how expensive lumber is. So when you go to a property, and I highly recommend you buy a property that's already established, the roads cut in. That might cost you $20,000 to have the driveway put in. The septic system's already in. The well is drilled. And you get on in the power line. I just mentioned $30,000 to $50,000 worth of infrastructure that's already in place. So maybe the structure is not so nice. You can bulldoze that and build another one. Or live in an RV on the property, but you have all this infrastructure. Now, if you want to do everything yourself and start from scratch, that's pretty cool. And put it on YouTube. There's a lot of people. I have a lot of friends. You know, they bought their dream property and they started from scratch and built it up. But not many people. You're so far ahead of the game if you buy an existing structure that has all the infrastructure in there by at least $50,000. Do you recommend hand pumps for existing well? The Earthstraw is one. I've not used Earthstraw. I know they're out of Arkansas. We have done 400 to 500, probably I'm on 475. We've done so many simple pumps that have been super reliable. I've never had a failure on one. I've put them in every state. Not every state, but most states. I don't think I've missed a state yet. I'm putting in a hand pump in a well. So they work great. They go down to 300 feet. Don't recommend it. The most I recommend is going about 200 foot static, not the depth of the well, the static water level, which is the distance from the top of the ground down to the top of the water. And you got to go about 30 feet into the water with the piston. Simple pump, hand pumps work awesome.
Okay. Oh, next question. Okay. So here. Boom.
Testing your well, you can go to Amazon and buy a water test, and you can test for lead and bacteria. Just one thing about water tests, you can buy a kit. They're like $19. Water Safe makes them. You see them everywhere. Just search Water Safe water testing kit. Test your water. It'll come back with coliform bacteria. Every naturally occurring source of water in the world has coliform. That's not going to hurt you. That's just the water that you drink. It's not going to hurt you. It's just an indication that E. coli and other bad bacteria can get into your water source. So you can test your own water.
Okay. Then next, let's see here. I'm only going to ones that put question there.
What should I look? Thank you for doing that. That's pretty cool for us. You're getting high tech. What should I look for in a property land when planning a homestead and possibly living off grid? Okay. Southern exposure, number one. Number one is back to like Forrest and I were talking about groups. You need to familiarize yourself with that neighborhood. I've got folks that have bought an amazing property in a horrible neighborhood, and they are going to get wiped out by the neighbors, and they're going to have all their beautiful gear stolen. It's going to happen. And I have one that I'm thinking about. They have stolen all of her gear. She has spent $1 million on this property and it's been decimated by her neighbors.
Wow.
And they've not been caught, and they've turned her in for permit issues and all this other stuff. So if you do not do your due diligence on the neighborhood, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. You want like-minded folks. You want the ability to protect yourself. You got to figure out number one is the neighborhood. Doesn't matter what if the neighbors are all against you, you're not going to do well at all. So neighborhood, Then the property itself, southern elevation, so you can take advantage of as much sunshine as you can get exposed to. Elevation change is very important if you're dealing with water systems where you want to use gravity to gravity feed your place. So elevation change is great for making power, for pumping water, and then having a good mix of arable land to grow food, good soil, a mixture of hardwoods, so for heating, and so energy source. And, you know, that's, you know, don't build, you know, I say this, but most people don't listen to me. Don't think about the view. The farmer would never put their farmhouse at the top of the hill. It was always below the water source so they could gravity feed their home, gravity feed their animals, gravity feed their gardens. So if you're going for the view, I don't want to say you're not a prepper, but you're not thinking right on how to utilize that property. There's a military crest concept too, where you don't want to be on top of that hill. You're giving away your location. You want to be below it, called the military crest, to build there. You can also take advantage of the earth temperature and berm part of the house.
But don't they just need to call you when they're getting ready to buy?
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah.
An hour on the phone with you.
A lot of times what we'll do, we do a consultation.
Yeah.
And if it turns into a project, we don't charge you for the consultation. If it turns to be where you're going to use us for your project, then we waive that consultation.
And so the next question is your Solark link. Is that on your website?
Yes. Solark is in our products in our store. We have a lot of products that we've added to the store. And I will put a plug in if anybody wanted. We were asked by several people how could they be practical preppers in their state or do what we do where they are. We've done what is called an affiliate program where you can sign up and sell products without having to do anything. And you make some money off of selling our products. And one of the products is the Solark, which has been a home run for us in terms of what it does. There's nothing can touch it in terms of performance on the market today. Nothing at all. We've tried them all. And so Solark is there. Send me an email, practicalpreppers@gmail.com. If California, many are saying the lithium batteries have fire issues and you can't put out a fire with water. Okay, I don't know if they're having, I mean, if the house is burning, the house is burning, but the lithium fire issues are typically in the batteries that Samsung had for a while. We're not talking about lithium ferrophosphate batteries that we use in solar systems. There's different lithium batteries out there. The LFP batteries, lithium ferrophosphate, when they fail, they implode, they melt, they don't burn your house down. That's typically the failure mode of the batteries that we install as lithium if they're going to burn. If your house is burning, you're going to lose everything anyway. But
your email, that's on your website, right?
It's our website. Our website is practicalpreppers.com, practicalpreppers.com, phone numbers, emails, all that.
If you'll read that for me, Scott, that'd be great.
They shall cast their silver in the streets, their gold shall be removed, their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. Yeah, so that's Ezekiel, in the day of the wrath of the Lord. When is that?
That's what I said. I said storm day.
Yes, I know and I believe the word that says, I am not a child of wrath. You know, so I know that time. That is the time, the day of the Lord.
Yep.
The day of the Lord. Yeah, that's, yes. Thank you for whoever posted that. How do you know if a well is almost dry or contaminated when buying a property or house? It's hard to determine the condition of a well. It's hard to tell if you don't have any history. If people have been living there and they've been fine and they've been living off the well, that's obviously the number one sign that they're fine. The well is fine. If it's a well that's a poor producer, then there's ways to beat that. You can pump at a lower rate, slower over time, and store the water at a higher elevation and gravity feed. So when you need a lot of water for drinking, showers, animals, or firefighting, that you have a large stored body of water above you. To know if a well is almost dry, you can measure it. If it's a bored well, drop a string and a line in it. Because I do come across these bored wells that only have like 2 foot of water in them. I saw one that had 8 inches of water. It used to have tons of water in it. For some reason, it's gone. And it's not a viable well. So you need to do some measurements. PracticalPreppers.com, Lynn.
PracticalPreppers.com. Yep. Let's see.
Okay.
That's really, that's all the questions we have at this time. Wow. That was good. You were on it. Here's another question. I did a last call for questions.
Thank you for all your help and answers, and thank you for helping us. Yes, it's great to be with you folks. Enjoyed it. And if you've got other questions, I mean, I'm tied to this umbilical cord, so I check my email all the time. So send me a question. Be happy to answer it. And if I can, I'll kick it to Forrest.
Yeah. And so I do know, because a lot of people want to see you. You will probably be next year at least at Prepper Camp and probably at least Heritage Life Skills.
Yes. Yes. If everything's normal, back to normal, whatever that means. I hate it. I just cannot. I had a conflict this year, folks. I'm sorry.
That's events in North Carolina, and now's the time to start planning for them. Just know that there's Heritage Life Skills and then there's Prepper Camp. And you're normally at both them every year.
Yeah, I usually do both of those, and I've enjoyed it. Rick does a great job and Chan does a great job. So those are two. They're always different, kind of contrasting prepper events, but they're, you know, we see all our friends, and I hate that I'm going to miss it.
Yep. So, well, do you have any last words? I know I always say that. People are like, wait, no, I don't have any last words for the show.
This is great. We'll do it again. If you do these, I don't know how often you're doing it, but I enjoy it. And just great. Appreciate the opportunity to get on there and be able to share our business and what we do. And yeah, go ahead.
One last time, tell us about you, because you didn't talk. Tell us about your book and your website. Apparently a lot of people are looking for property. And I will tell you right now, because I work with a lot of groups, you need to call Scott before you buy any property. At least because he can pull up maps and Google Earth. He can do a lot of research and never even see your property and give you somewhat of a decent evaluation with the internet and the information you can get.
Yeah. I have a helioscope simulation software. There's a lot of things we can do. Wind simulation analysis, hydro. If you are familiar with the property and you have walked it and I can get on there and walk it with you virtually, then we can kind of talk about some strategies, house locations, how to make power, where to put things. And today there's not the limitation. Like, people are like, well, I don't want to put solar. I don't want to see it. You know, we just did a job in North Carolina where we set the solar panels 1,000 feet from the house. 1,000 feet is a long ways from the house. And because of the new technologies, I can do it high voltage and I didn't lose any power. At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was bringing in almost 12 kW of power from a solar array. It was absolutely mind boggling. It's awesome. So yes, with the technology that changes every 6 months, we can look at that piece of property and say, here's a potential top three solar. This is where you should drill your well. This is where you should put your solar. This is a good place to put the house. Think about your animals, animal husbandry in the future, your garden locations. We kind of lay it out. It's very challenging and fun. It's not written in stone. There's a lot of flexibility of it, but try and take advantage of the sunshine, of the elevation changes, water sources. And most anybody can punch a well if they get a well truck in there. There's a few places in the country that have difficulty. I know some in Tennessee. There's even some in North Carolina where they weren't able to hit water. But it's very, very, very few places where you cannot get a well. And we can talk about that. And then once you have that, what appliances should you put in your home? Right down to the refrigerator manufacturer, the type of air conditioning, the mini splits versus these heat pumps. But new heat pumps are finally coming up to speed where they had soft start and they're awesome. So equipment changes a lot. So if you don't go with the guy that the builder that says, I've been doing this for 50 years, that doesn't mean you're going to get the right stuff. You're going to get what he's familiar with. not what you want to do to live off grid. So off grid, designing for off grid is not what your typical contractor has any clue about. And that's where we like to come in and say, no, do this. We'll work with your contractor. We'll work with your electrician, but tell them about this piece of equipment. This will save you so much money on your system. And where you would have had to buy two inverters to run what he recommended, you can do it with one.
So I would say this, if you're buying a piece of property.
Oh, sorry. Question.
Yeah. If you're buying a piece of property and you don't call Scott beforehand, you need to have your head examined, because Scott's a 1 hour or 2 hour phone call is a few hundred bucks. You know, I don't know. It's about $200. I don't even know what I charge you, but it's worth it. It could save you tens of thousands. If not, buying the wrong property could save you $100,000. I mean,
the best win when we say do not do this, so that's when we can steer you into a better property. Yes. It's great. Awesome question.
One other one back up here was, you never really go to Mother Earth, really, and they're not going to be an ask for you.
Well, I went to Mother Earth when it was, even the same day was Jan's was there, and I snuck out and went to Mother Earth. I think Mother Earth is great.
Yeah, but they've changed it. I don't think they're going to be an ask for anymore.
Oh, okay.
That's the word on the street.
All right. Didn't know that.
So here's one. What about internet in rural areas?
Okay. I am in a rural area. My internet is done through a Ubiquiti radio. So it's called the last mile, being able to get internet in places where you couldn't get it before. So Ubiquiti has equipment that can shoot it using radio waves. Like we have there's a YMCA camp that gets their internet now from 30 miles away. It's done with radio, no fiber optics, no cables. It's actually transmitted via radio. My internet that I'm on right now is radio. It is not cable. I'm not tied to satellite. It is cable it's being relayed from two mountains over to I put a receiver in my pasture because I asked this company, I said, "Hey, can you shoot internet over to me?" And I found out about them and they shoot internet to me. And then I relay it from that receiver to my house and I can shoot internet all over the place. I got 14 mile range. You're within 14 miles line of sight of me. I could shoot you pretty decent speed internet. And so there's this Ubiquiti Ubiquiti, sort of spelled weird. Just Google Ubiquiti radios. You can set up an entire mesh on your prepper property and have your own network for video cameras, surveillance, everything you want to do internet-wise, and have your own local area network. But you can do it with Ubiquiti. Ubiquiti makes some amazing, amazing products.
Is it expensive?
Yeah. But it's not crazy expensive for what it does. Man, you want a video camera set up and somewhere on your property, it's tied in with your network. Man, you can. Ubiquiti is impressive.
How far from the big city should you look for a homestead?
It depends on the city and the location. I mean, I'm going to pick Atlanta, for instance. I know within 2 hours of Atlanta, there's the most amazing, beautiful properties that I would love to, that would be great prepper properties. So it looks like a minimum of 2 hours out. I don't know about Charlotte, but New York City, maybe 4 or 5 hours. It depends on the size of the city and the sprawl. So that's a hard question to answer. A lot of it depends on just the population and the urban sprawl and getting away. There's still a lot of great properties. Man, I see so many beautiful properties. If I'm in Georgia, Western North Carolina, upstate South Carolina, Tennessee, in that area, there are so many preppers and the property is beautiful. It's safe from tornadoes typically. I mean, there's always bad weather issues, but things are broken up by the mountains. Great water, plenty of sunshine, plenty of arable soil. But man, there's some God's country. It's just phenomenal. Now you can go any place. I mean, I did a job up in Canada, which was absolutely beautiful, but you got to contend, you know, with 32 feet of snow. So if you're, but you got less population density. So there's in every location, there's a trade-off. So there's always trade-offs. You know, some people say, I'm going to go to Canada and I'm going to prepare. Yeah, because you don't have anybody around. So you're not going to be, but you're going to naturally be a prepper because it's harder to live there.
Okay. Linda, which I think you know, Linda.
Oh, yeah. Linda.
She, can you come over to
Pumpkin? You're in my backyard over Pumpkin Town and look at a piece of property. Yes, you are not far from me, so just send me an email.
Oh, send him the credit card. No kidding. Send me the credit card. Linda, you know how to get up with him. Yeah. What's the next?
Aren't you still managing the Greenville group? Doesn't she manage?
Yeah, she manages our Greenville group. Yep. You've spoken there before, haven't you? Or?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think she let me.
Yeah, you're too busy. Can you I don't see any Nashville. I'm not sure if these are questions or not. The internet. Oh, they're still talking about internet. Oh, the one that asked about the internet, that's what she said to you. Thank you.
Oh, okay. You're welcome.
Yep. And all these other ones about the internet. So that's all the questions. So that was the last call. So we're right at 2 hours. So just know that you and Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, we could probably go on a 5-hour show and people still not be bored. But
I don't know about that. But you remember Eutychus? Remember when he fell out of the window and broke his neck? You're just falling asleep.
right here. So look familiar?
Oh yeah. I got one of them. Can we do a double?
Yeah.
Look at that.
This is Scott's book. I'm sure you can find it on his website or
and I'm talking about the properties in quite a bit in there. Just ingrained in me. Like my dad said, if you ever buy a piece of property without water on, I'll disown you. That kind of stuff. Just what there's I've learned.
There's my book, and then there's Scott's book. So,
But your topic. I'd rather talk about your topic more than mine. Anyway,
that was a good book. That was one of the. I've literally purchased probably seven. Every book that I buy, I buy at least 7 or 8 of them. Of Charlie's book, the Mags Manual, I've given it out and I never get them returned, so I have to buy another one.
Yeah, I give these are my business cards. I usually hand them out to a customer or somebody I meet and just sign it and give it to them. So it's been cool. I mean, it's been a while. It needs to be updated. It's got a lot of pictures in it.
But, and one last question.
What we got?
And I can add is what areas of Tennessee and South Carolina you mentioned. So you're just talking about the Appalachian region.
Absolutely.
And all the count states there.
Yes. I mean, and I probably shouldn't say the people in Georgia probably shoot me, but there's a section of North Georgia that has blown me away. I've done a lot of projects there that has been, it's kind of like the perfect place because no inspections, gorgeous property. I mean, the Indians, you could see the whole Cherokee where they set up camps and stuff. You could tell why they landed there, why they were sustainable there is why a prepper will do extremely well there. Great trout streams, beautiful water, just there's beautiful valleys and then woods and then valleys and then woods. But it's not straight up and straight down. It is just usable land. Just gorgeous. I mean, just absolutely. And then weather year round is nice. And that's why they could survive. That's why they thrived in that area, I think. I mean, I'm digging in that ground. I'm installing stuff there. I see how the systems perform. And then I don't need to go through some AHJ that's telling me, if I go to North Carolina and they want 5 inspections on a system, that's ridiculous. So it's, stay away from the overregulated areas.
Is the land cheap there or reasonable?
Becoming unreasonable. Tennessee's great too. I get to see the best. I mean, I just got back from Michigan. Gorgeous property. Alabama, gorgeous property. So there's in every state, there is awesome prepper property. I believe that in every single state. There's
Florida?
This is a weird thing. This is a weird thing. I have not, I say I've been pumps in every state. I've sold them. I have never been to Florida in my life.
You've been to Disney?
No, I would never go to Disney. I would never. You couldn't pay me to go to Disney. I've never been to Florida. It's so weird. And I'm not that far from Florida. So, but anyway, there's still, I have customers that I've shown me. There's beautiful properties, prepper properties in Florida.
Okay, so, tell us your website and your email address, and they can get in touch with you. I want you guys to know this. Scott is a, he is a gem to the prepper people. Use his knowledge, save money by using his skills and knowledge before you buy land, before you do solar. And he will help you. He's got amazing things on your website that you sell. And, but tell us where to go and how to get up with you.
Yeah, practicalpreppers.com has all the information, and that will take you to our social media too. If you're having a trouble sleeping, just watch my YouTube channel. You'll be out in a few minutes. It's great. Sometimes I get a little long winded and put people out, but we've got, I've got, I don't know how 1,000 videos of, we put everything we do. If the customer allows, I film the project and put it up on YouTube. And so to give you some ideas. So the YouTube channel is Engineer775. Practical Preppers is our website and our business, and email practicalpreppers@gmail.com. And we're all over Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all that fun stuff, and LinkedIn. Yeah, so you can get a hold of me. You definitely give me a message. I mean, email is probably the best way, because we have a couple people in the office just checking emails, and that's probably the way to not get lost in the shuffle. And it is quite a shuffle this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a mess. So we are, you know, extremely blessed and busy, because from COVID to riots to fires to people bugging out, getting out of the Floridas, I see the comments, and going to properties, real estate selling like crazy, you know, for these types of properties. So we get a lot of contact there. So it's fun to get you going. But what we can do for you as a DIY, if you're any type of, if you can put something together, if you've got any hand skills, a little bit of electrical skills, or you can hire, if your good buddy's an electrician, we can walk you through any solar system installation. That's kind of fun. It's very rewarding. I get the, you know, it's like, I'm ready to turn the system on. And I walk them through the settings right down to what to put in the inverter, and the system's up and running. That is fun. So if you want a fun DIY system, save yourself 20 grand, I'd be happy to help you through that.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, thank you, Scott Hunt, Engineer 775. You've been amazing again.
And this is fun. Good job, Forrest. You've done an amazing job with putting this PrepperNet together.
And we'll do this again for sure. And thank you for everything you've done for PrepperNet and just being on our expert panel and, you know, and everything, man. So I appreciate it.
I'll get into things, but you've done an amazing job. So if you need to use me, you know, more, do it.
Okay. Will do.
Okay.
Well, guys, join us next week, where we're going to have Pastor Felix. We are going to go to the dark side and talk about some end time prophecy. And, you know, Scott, you, if you want to call in, we may even let you call in. But it's just going to be a fun hour of talking about things the Bible talks about. People have questions. And so we're going to do that next week. I'm going to be giving away my book. It's through the digital copy, The Case for Christian Preparedness. It took me, you know, mine's got 70 pages. Scott's got 700. So next Thursday night, 8:00, we always have a great guest, and we'll see you then. Thanks, Scott.
All right. Thank you. God bless everybody.
Yep. God bless. Right. See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.